Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find
one. Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stuff.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Peter Schiff, I'm doing Wall Street Unspun live from Weston, Connecticut. We do the show every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. You can hear the show on the Europac website, EUROPAC.net. In fact, the new Europac website is up and running, so check it out if you haven't seen it. 100% of the bugs haven't been worked out, but I think it's a big improvement, especially once it's completely finished from the old site that we had. Also, the shows are, you know, archived. All the past shows are there on podcasts, iTunes, so you can check out the previous broadcast. Also, I take calls live, 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Oh, wait, I went to the wrong website. In fact, this is probably the first time I think people are, well, I think last week maybe the new website was up. For the Wall Street Unspun. But I'm trying to bring the page up now so I have it. But I know it's 888, as I said, 888-678-9597. I think there are quite a few lines still open. So make sure and call. Well, I got back last week. I was in Freedom Fest, which was why I couldn't do the show. I was in the plane. I think I got to speak for 5 minutes. So thanks, Nerds, for sitting in for me. Hello to everybody that I saw out in Freedom Fest. There were almost 2,000 people there. Unfortunately, though, like last year, very few people actually donated to the Schiff for Senate campaign. So it's kind of unfortunate. You get this huge gathering of people who are really concerned about freedom. But when you have a candidate like me actually trying to do something deliver freedom, restrict government control on our lives, to try to do everything that the people meeting at Freedom Fest want to accomplish, there's very few people there that are actually willing to lift a finger or write out a check to do anything about it. So it's a shame. I mean, unfortunately, the number of people in this country who are actually going to do something to try to change the direction of this country, there is very, very small number of you out there, and if you are working, I appreciate what you're doing. And if we save this country, it's because of the work of a very, very, very small minority of people. Even among the people who understand the problems, who get it, who understand the true role of government, who are fed up with big government and understand what we need, even among their numbers, the number of people who are actually willing to do anything about it personally, to make any kind of personal sacrifice, even a small one, it's very rare that somebody is willing to do that. So the people who are doing that, I definitely take my hat off to you, because I now really appreciate how few our numbers really are. You know, if you do want to do something to help, you know, in the Schiff for Senate campaign, we are really are pushing heavily with my phone banking. So if you go to shiftforsenate.com, which is the campaign website, and right on the front page, there's a Liberty Bell. And if you click on that, you can help us with phone banking. It's free if you have a landline. If you only have a cell phone, then it might be free, depending if you have some free minutes, you know. But there are no long-distance charges. But it's really simple to do. There's a tutorial on the website if you click the link. But basically, you put in your home phone number into the computer. A couple seconds later, you'll get a phone call. You pick up the phone. And you see a screen, and in the screen it'll tell you who it's calling, and it'll give you the name of the person they're calling, and it'll ring. You don't even have to dial. And if somebody answers, if it's a voicemail, You just listen to the voicemail, wait for the beep, push a button, the computer will leave a voicemail, and then it'll just dial the next call. And it'll keep doing that, and then when you get a live human, then you talk to them, and it's great. I mean, we've actually made, in the last 4 days, about 25,000 phone calls. We've spoken to over 10,000 people. These are all registered Republican voters. We've got just under a month until the election. I need to have 1,000 people nationwide making 50 calls a day. Based on the amount of time, it should take you an hour to make 50 calls, including the people that you talk to. An hour a day of 1,000 people in this country care enough about the country and care enough to get me elected that they're willing to spend an hour a day of their time for the next 4 weeks, I'll get the Republican nomination. I'm sure of it. And if I do, I think I can win. So that's something that you can do. If you don't have a spare hour, if you don't have any free time, then you must be awfully busy. You must be making a lot of money. So make a donation. If you can't donate your time, donate some money. ShiftForSenate.com. It's important. We have less than a month until the primary. I can win this thing. I know I can do it if I get enough support. If I get financial support, if I get the phone banking. So if you're listening to this show, if you've been listening to this show over the years, you know what I stand for. You know how important it is that I get to the United States Senate. So make it happen. Do something. Make the phone call. Send a donation. Talk to other people. Anybody who's making the phone calls, if you have any, you want to call the show and talk about your experience, I'd be interested to have the listeners here because I know there are some people that are a little shy. They don't want to make phone calls. Hey, they can't bite you. They can't even see you. They don't know who you are. Right, so there's no reason to be embarrassed, and believe me, it's really easy to do. When I got started in the investment business, I was making almost 1,000 calls a day, cold calls. You want to get rejection. That's what's tough. People were hanging up on me, calling me names. I mean, that's the worst thing, right? Calling people up trying to sell them something, right? You're not selling them anything. These are Republicans. They're registered Republicans. You're giving them information that they want. You're letting them know about a candidate that they can believe in. That will actually help deliver what they want. Republicans are very frustrated because whenever they send a Republican to Washington, they govern like a Democrat. Connecticut Republicans are particularly frustrated because they haven't even sent a Republican senator to Washington in over 30 years. Let them know about me. These are warm calls. They're going to be glad to hear from you. So anyway, make a call. Anyway, go to shiftforsenate.com. I see one caller in. We need some calls. 888-678-9597. Well, the markets have pretty much moved sideways, I think, in the last week or so after a decisive down move. We got the Dow Jones back above 10,000. But, the dollar, to me, seems like it's resumed its decline. It's fallen, I think, for four consecutive weeks. It fell again today. The dollar index has gone from about 89 down to about 83. I mean, you're talking about close to a 10% decline from its peak. I think we've got a head and shoulders bottom in the euro. I think that, the euro is poised for a rally. The sentiment on the euro is very, very negative. And I think that's a perfect situation to have a short covering rally in the euro. People got overly negative on Europe. And believe me, long term, I still have a lot of problems with Europe. And I've talked about that for years. But short term, the problems are far more acute here in the United States. But if you look at the markets, look at what's going on with the DAX. I mean, the DAX is almost at a 52-week high. I mean, the DAX is all the way back to its high point from May of this year, right? I mean, it's only like 100 points off its high. It's 6,200. The high was 6,300. Look at the Dow Jones, on the other hand. The Dow Jones back at that time was around 11,300. It's now 10,000. It's 1,000 points down. So the Dow is still off 10%, and the DAX, the country Germany everyone's worried about, is close to making a new high. What's going on? Well, what's going on is Europe is getting serious about cutting deficits, at least in the short run. They're not just talking the talk. They're actually walking the walk. I think they should be making even more progress. But you know what? Some progress is better than no progress, which is what we're making. In fact, we're doing worse than making no progress. We're going in reverse. You see, the Europeans are embracing the fact that deficits matter, that they inhibit economic growth, that the best way to grow the economy is to shrink the government, to shrink the deficits, to spend less. we're still following the Pied Paper of Keynesianism, Krugman over at the New York Times. We're thinking that the way we grow the economy is to grow the government, right? To go deeper into debt. They think that the way that you sober up is drink more alcohol. Well, the Germans are figuring out, you know, that doesn't work. And I think the stock market is showing you that, and the euro is showing you that. The euro is turned up for a reason, right? And it's because Europe is headed in the right direction. They might not be going in the right direction fast, but at least they're going that way. We are headed in the wrong direction, and unfortunately, going very, very fast. So, you know, people haven't figured up on this, but, you know, look at the other markets. Look at the oil market. You know, oil is still below $80 a barrel, but it's above 75, and the chart looks strong to me. You know, meanwhile, look at the trade deficit that came out yesterday, another unexpected increase. I think it was $42 billion. The trade deficit is getting wider again, not narrower, and it's still huge, right? These are enormous trade deficits, averaging over $500 billion, that's half $1 trillion per year. You add the trade deficit to the budget deficit of $1.5 trillion. We've got twin deficits. These are the, you know, I don't want to call them the Twin Towers anymore, you know, but they are the mountains. You know, these are gigantic, a $2 trillion of twin deficits, $2 trillion a year. You know, this is hurting our economy. They're about to pass this new financial regulation bill. I mean, I think they've got the senators, you know, lining up for them that they need to pass this monstrosity. You know, it's I don't know how many thousands of pages long this bill is. More unneeded, unnecessary regulation. The very, very kind of regulation that caused the financial crisis, that inflated the housing bubble, that led to the moral hazard, that levered us all up. What did we learn anything from our mistakes? Absolutely not. We just repeat them on a bigger scale. This is just going to make the next financial crisis worse. Of course, it's coming anyway, so it doesn't matter. I mean, you're talking about, you know, a little more kindling on what's going to be a roaring inferno, so it's not going to matter. But, of course, you know, any chance we have to do the wrong thing, Congress doesn't waste any time in doing it. And what's amazing is, though, these guys are going to pass this bill with all kinds of fanfare. The guys, Congress had caused the financial crisis, right? They couldn't see it coming from a mile away. They're now going to take credit for putting out the fire that they lit. And the reality is they didn't put out anything. It's going to return, and it's going to burn this whole economy to a cinder. And then you know what they're going to do? They're going to say we need even more regulation, that the last one just wasn't big enough, it wasn't good enough, because that's how bad capitalism and that's how bad the free market is. That is what their rhetoric is. And we it is completely wrong, and it is very dangerous, and we got to do something about it. I mean, if it's not elected me to the United States Senate, you know, I don't know what we can do except protect our own wealth, right? And that's, you know, own the metals, own the gold, own silver, be out of the dollar, own commodities, you know, invest in, you know, the Asian markets, I think, you know, they haven't turned up yet. I mean, look at the DAX I mentioned, but if you look at some of the Asian markets, they're still some of the worst performing on the year. I mean, look where the Hang Seng is. The Hang Seng, that stock back in May, the index was around 25,000 in April of this year, and it's down around 20,500. So it's even had a bigger correction than the U.S., despite the fact that the fundamentals there, I mean, are night and day. I mean, that's the fundamentals in Asia are the best in the world. There's no question about it. You know, I mentioned on the video blog I did a couple days ago that a Chinese rating agency just launched its coverage of the sovereign debt and had at least the integrity to rate the U.S. AA instead of AAA. They have about 13 countries that are higher credit quality than America. Now, I still think they're being too generous. I think our debt is junk bonds, but, you know, that's me. But at least they rated U.S. sovereign debt lower than Chinese sovereign debt. Now, we got China four notches. S&P and Moody's have got China four notches below us. Now, how can that be? We owe China $1 trillion. How can they be a worse credit risk than us? They can't go broke unless we can't pay them the trillion that we owe them, right? So we have to go broke first. In fact, look at China's foreign reserves. Their foreign reserves are $2.5 trillion. Ours are $50 billion. Our foreign reserves don't even equal 1 year's interest on China's foreign reserves. You know, the Chinese government has issued debt. But the Chinese government is not in debt, right? They are a creditor. They are owed much more than they owe. So I mean, their credit quality is fantastic. I mean, it's impossible for them not to be able to pay. On the other hand, America is trillions and trillions. Our government is trillions and trillions and trillions in debt. I mean, if anyone's going to default, it's America, it's not China. And, of course, we might not default because we can print money, but when you're worried about sovereign credit risk, you got to worry about the printing press as much as you worry about default. And on that score, not only is there a risk that we're going to print money, it's a foregone conclusion. In fact, we're bragging about it. The government is telling everybody that we're going to print money. That's like saying we're going to default, you know, and people are dumb enough to buy the debt anyway. But, you know, this could be like, you know, the emperor has new clothes. You get one person to come up and say the emperor has no clothes. You get one rating agency to downgrade U.S. You know, it could be the beginning of a long line of downgrades. Now, I know people will try to belittle it. Oh, it's just China. What do they know? Well, they must know something, right? They're sitting on $2.5 trillion in reserves. You know, they're now, you know, going to be, they're the world's biggest automobile market. They're going to be the world's biggest exporter soon in raw volume. And, of course, as far as the things that most Americans are consuming, China is our number one supplier because most of the things that we manufacture, you know, no one buys those things. I mean, we do make aircrafts, but how often does the average American go to the store and buy a 747? It doesn't happen very often. The stuff we actually need, the stuff that we buy on a weekly or monthly or yearly basis, it's all been outsourced to China. We are very, very vulnerable because of the nature of our phony consumer-based economy. And, you know, the Fed came out today with its statement, you know, about the economy recovering. I mean, it's not recovering from anything. It's sicker than it was before. But, of course, what did they say? They said that interest rates are going to stay low indefinitely for an extended period of time. You know, what does that tell you? You know, the economy is okay, but we need to keep it on life support just in case. They know that it's phony, but the reality is we need higher interest rates. The low interest rates are the problem, right? Just like the heroin addict needs heroin, right? The problem is the heroin, you know. But the government say, oh, but if we stop giving him heroin, he's going to go through withdrawal. Exactly. We need that economic withdrawal. We need to go through credit withdrawal. You can't have interest rates at zero. What about the savers? They're getting nothing. No one's going to save. I mean, if no one's going to save, how's investment going to be financed? Where's capital going to come from? We're not going to have it. How are we going to get businesses to grow? How are we going to get jobs without capital? We won't. That is the trade-off. If we want to keep interest rates at 0% so we can keep insolvent financial institutions above board, so we can keep bankrupt consumers to buying more stuff, so we can expand the government, so we have more government programs and more regulation. If we're going to keep interest rates at 1% so the government can go deeper into debt, the trade-off is the economy collapses. The trade-off is we lose our jobs and our standard of living falls, and we basically consign ourselves to poverty, to runaway government, to totalitarianism, to hyperinflation. I don't want all those things, right? I want to go culturally. Let's go through the withdrawal, because compared to what's in store for us, if we
don't kick this habit, the withdrawal is going to be a picnic. Anyway, let me take a look at the callers, see if we got more calls coming in. Where is that screen? Oh, looks like we got a full board. So I will start with whoever has been on hold the longest, and that is going to be Will in Oregon. Go ahead, Will.
Hi. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Will. Hi, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm a contributor to your campaign.
Thank you.
Don't put into silver, you know. Try to throw it towards your campaign. So when I was laid off from my tech job because of the economy, I started looking for answers, and I discovered you in Austrian Economics, and I've been listening to your show for a few months now. And
are you still unemployed?
Yeah, I'm still unemployed. Still looking.
Well, that means you have a lot of time to make phone calls for me. Have you been making calls on the phone banking?
Well, I've been working some side jobs, but yeah, that's the plan for tomorrow. Gonna. Probably
fantastic. Now, let me ask you a question. This whole thing is anonymous, right? You're working some side jobs. Are you collecting unemployment benefits?
No, they ran out, so.
Oh, okay. All right. But between your side jobs, yeah, get some calls in.
Yeah. Anyway, so I had a question for you. I'm kind of an aspiring entrepreneur, or at least in the future. Oregon, we have a big craft brewing industry, and I was hoping to, like, one day own my own brewery. So I kind of had
that's everybody's dream job there, you know.
Yeah. I was wondering, so when you started out, when you were an entrepreneur, just getting started, did you have any habits or tips that you would suggest a young entrepreneur adopt? Or?
You know, I don't know. You know, I kind of became an entrepreneur almost by default. You know, I was never able to get a job. I have never been hired in my life. I mean, I did get a job on as a stockbroker, but it was commission only. But every job that I ever interviewed for where I was going to be paid a salary, I didn't get it. No, they wouldn't hire me. And even when I worked in Wall Street at Sears and Lehman, I mean, I really didn't fit in. So almost because I didn't fit in that I had to do things by myself, because I had my own opinion on things, and I always wanted to do things my way. And that didn't make me a good employee, because employers don't want people who want to do it their own way. They want people that do it their way. And so some of, you know, if you've got that kind of, you know, mentality, if that's the kind of person you are, right? That, you know, you have your own, you want to do it. You look at something and you decide, you know, this is how it should be done. And you know, then that's, you know, that's a good concept, I guess, for being your own boss and starting your own company.
Yeah, I totally agree. I go to like my relatives and stuff now and ask them, hey, you know, everybody's looking for jobs, but nobody's talking about creating them or starting their own business. Everybody's like, why can't I find any jobs? Well, why don't you create one for yourself, or why don't you?
Yeah, you know, I was on this PBS, NPR radio, you know, with a bunch of liberals, and the host was like, you know, just asking, like, do you really believe that if we didn't have all these regulations that, you know, businesses would just exploit people, they would pay them nothing, nobody would ever get a vacation, we would all be miserable if it wasn't for government protecting us from business. And I'm thinking, like, you know, who does he think business is? I mean, most people work for small business. I mean, these are the people that hire people are just like the people who they hire. They're individuals. They're good people. And, you know, it's a free market. You know, businesses aren't, you know, you don't have to be afraid of a business. Businesses can't force you to buy their products, and they can't force you to take the jobs they offer, because you can always take a different job if you can get a better one. You can always buy a better product if you get a better deal. You know, the fact of the matter is every American has a choice. They can work for themselves or they can work for somebody else. And the fact that most Americans choose to work for somebody else is because they don't want to do it. They don't want to start a business. They don't want to take the risk. They don't want the sacrifice. They want the easy way out. Believe me, having a job is the easy way out. Creating jobs, that's, if you do it right, the rewards are fantastic. But, you know, most people aren't willing to do what it takes to reap those rewards. That's reality. But and what happens is a lot of people are jealous or envious of the people who did. But you know what? Everybody has the opportunity to do it. Now, there's always the occasional guy that inherited a bunch of money from his parents. I mean, some people are just going to draw, you know, a lucky lot. There's always someone that wins the lottery. And, you know, and some people are born with an incredible talent. Some people are born and, you know, they're beautiful, or, and they can, and, you know, and that's that. I mean, that's life. Life isn't fair. You can't be envious of people who got lucky. But the vast majority of people who have achieved great success didn't do it because they got lucky. They earned it because they worked hard, and everybody could do that. The problem is the government has taken that dream away from more and more people. The more rules we have, the more regulation we have, the less free we are, and the harder it is for people to start businesses and grow businesses and achieve the American dream. Anyway,
well, I'm going to try.
All right, well, don't let me discourage you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, don't worry about that. I have one more question.
All right.
It's kind of a segue business that would have like a low like level of entry. I was wondering, you said during a hyperinflation scenario, the majority of people's income is going to be spent on food. Is that correct?
I think so, yep.
So
food and food and energy.
Yeah, I was just bounce this idea off you. Would a company that would kind of helps people start like Victory Garden, like they had during the Great Depression, be like a possible good idea?
That anything that helps people be, you're going to have a lot of people who are unemployed, so they're going to have a lot of time to do their own gardening. You know, and so stock up on the seeds, and you know, before they're in short supply, but make sure you get an area in your backyard ready. And you know, yeah, anything where you're helping people do it themselves. Because that's what people are going to be doing, because the government is going to make it hard for you to go out and get a job, so it's going to force people into a subsistence existence. There's also going to be more barter going on. You know, people are going to be, you know, so if you have extra food, you might be able to trade it with somebody who has something else that you might need.
Yeah. I had a barter idea, but I think I'm going to keep that to myself. I don't want to.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Don't broadcast it over the show. All right. Thanks a lot. Okay, good luck to you, Will.
Thank you.
All right. Next up is Ellen in New York. Go ahead, Ellen.
Hello, Peter.
Hi, Ellen.
Hi. Just a quick comment, and then I wanted to ask you two questions about gold coins. Just wanted to tell you that in terms of the business that I have and the work that I do, I've been seeing firsthand where small businesses just are struggling, having their credit lines cut, can't get credit, can't get a loan. They're suffering away, and then in the meantime, I go out to lunch with a woman on Sunday, and her type of work is where she gets federal grants to do research on social welfare kind of stuff. Oh, she got a big grant this year. She's happy. Mm. She thinks Obama's great. In the meantime, I know people with businesses who are struggling. So
it confirms
what you're saying. I just want to confirm you are not crazy. I am seeing it first. So that's
Thank
my
you.
Comment. I did want to ask you about gold coins. I heard a while ago that if you go to sell gold coins, that whoever sells them for you would have to report if it's 25 coins or higher. And someone today told me, no, it's down to 10. We have to report if it's 10 or higher. Then this person also told me that during that confiscation during the 1930s, that the government did not confiscate European gold coins, very small ones that were a fifth of an ounce, which came from Europe. I just wanted to run this by you. Have you heard of anything like this?
Yeah, well, you sound like you're reading from the Gold Line sales pitch.
Basically, that's what it felt like. Someone was pitching me, and that's why I wanted to call and ask.
Yeah, look, when Roosevelt confiscated gold, remember, we were on a gold standard, so everybody had gold, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Roosevelt wanted to devalue the dollar, and that's why they confiscated the gold, because they wanted to get all the gold before they made the gold worth more.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was an executive, people had to turn in their gold. Now, they didn't dispatch agents to your house. It was the honor system. You mm-hmm. either turned it in or you kept it. A lot of people didn't turn their coins in, right? Because that's why there's so many coins around, because whatever they got, they melted down. But I think there was an exception if you had an antique coin that had value because it was antique, that was way beyond the metallic content, that you wouldn't have to turn it in. Okay? I think that's, but you know what? If they confiscate gold again, it's not going to be that way. They're going to confiscate all the gold.
Yeah.
Because gold is no different now than stocks or real estate. I mean, we're not on the gold standard anymore. In fact, the only reason the government would confiscate gold is because they're trying to seize our wealth. There's no real reason to do it the way Roosevelt did it, because we're not on the gold standard. You can't devalue the dollar. But, the company like Goldline, those little European coins that they're saying have numismatic value, they don't. They're basically bullion coins. The fact of the matter is the coins, their most popular coins, have very little numismatic value, maybe 3 or 4 or 5% above their melt value, tops. But they're selling these things at huge premiums. In fact, Goldline sells these coins for 67% more than their cost.
Yes, this is not Goldline. It was a small operation, but
other people might do the same thing. There is so much fraud in the rare coin business. That's why I set up my own company, Euro Pacific Precious Metals. We're working now. Go to europacmetals.com. We will not sell you numismatic coins. If you want gold, don't buy numismatics, and we will mark up the coins by a fair amount. You're not gonna. I mean, this is crazy. Marking these coins up 67%. I think people doing that. I think it's criminal, to be honest with you. It's very unfortunate. But I got a my own coin company, my own bullion company now. And so anyone that calls my company, they're not going to get high pressure to do the wrong thing. We're going to help you find the gold and silver coins and bars that make sense. And we're not going to rape you on the markup. So.
And have you heard anything about this reporting requirement that it has to be reported if somebody sells more than 10 coins? Is this at all familiar to you?
Well, right now, if you do have a U.S., I think, legal tender coins, there's no 1099s if you sell them. I mean, it doesn't mean you don't have to pay taxes on the gains, But there's a bill right now to introduce the requirement that you have to that they're going to have to 1099 you on any transaction, even if it, as low as $600. So the government is going to be stepping up the surveillance on gold and bullion dealers. No question about it. In fact, who knows? I think there's a lot of regulation. I think they're going to use this Gold Line case. I think they might have some charges. Who knows, one of these days. I think they're going to make an example because these guys really are overcharging, but that doesn't mean the government has to regulate all the people that aren't overcharging because there are a lot of smaller, reputable companies out there that are doing a real good job. But the problem is they're going to have to pay the price for these big firms that are really, really ripping off their clients.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I wanted to run it by you.
Thanks very much.
Supporter and contributor and a client and all that.
Thank you. Are you making calls yet?
I made a lot of calls for you earlier in the year because I was home with a knee injury, and I made a lot of calls for you. I'm having trouble now because of my work schedule.
Well, we got a much better system, so if you have a few minutes, give it a try. It really is easy.
Okay. Very good. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, and it's a shame, too, that there's so many good people, a lot of the conservative radio talk show hosts have been, are endorsing these firms that are overcharging. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say they don't realize how much these companies are overcharging their audience. Hopefully, if they figure it out, they'll do the right thing and stop endorsing these companies. And I say that not simply because I'm now competing with them, but, hey, if you're going to endorse a company, you should make sure that they're the best firm and that they're not overcharging your audience. I mean, that's for sure. Anyway, next up is Brian in California. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, Peter, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks. For starters, I just wanted to let you know this Friday I plan on being the winner of the day for calls. I haven't really been able to just because I'm up here at UC Berkeley. I'm doing summer sessions, so I'm literally swamped the entire day. If anyone, I guess I put that as a challenge to anybody who I guess wants to beat me on Friday. You're welcome to try. But
for those of you who don't know, every day we haven't mailed out any books yet. So if you've won the contest, don't think I'm screwing you. I'm gonna probably wait and do a bunch of them at once. But whoever makes the most calls of the day wins an autographed copy of my latest book, How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes. And whoever does the most for the week gets a phone call from me and an autographed copy of Crash Proof 2.0. And there is going to be a grand prize at the election at the end for the top. I'm not sure. I haven't figured out what the prize is going to be. The thing is, I don't want to give up. Some people have said, hey, why don't you give out these big monetary prizes? I don't want to do that. I mean, I want people doing this because they want to and because they believe in me, not because they're getting paid. But also, if I give out big monetary prizes, you know what's going to happen? People are going to do it. They're not going to talk. They're not even going to let the calls. You can cheat. There's ways that you could just, short. And I don't want people doing it. I don't want people cheating to make a lot of money. I know that if people are doing it just to get a $20 book, they're not going to cheat. They're going to be honest. They're doing it. The book is symbolic. If they want my autographed book, it's because they believe in me and they want it. And that's who I want making phone calls. This is a grassroots effort. People are volunteering. They're volunteering their time because they want to see me in the United States Senate, not because they're getting paid. That's the key.
I absolutely agree. And this weekend, I absolutely plan to spend from 6 in the morning, well, California time, till 7 o'clock at night, California time, just making phone calls.
Thank you. You know what?
Sunday.
Get a couple of your friends. Make it a party. Get a whole bunch of people up there at Cal. I'm a Cal grad. It's my alumni.
Yeah.
I don't think there's has there a grad that's been a senator from Connecticut. I don't know. So.
I doubt it. But all right. Well, so that being said, here's my question. Right now, I have 2 more years to go here in college, and afterwards, I would like to. Chances are, the way things are looking, I would like to possibly leave the country. But there are two regions that I'm considering. I'm considering Europe and Latin America. Now, the advantage I have in both is I have a German citizenship, so I have that. But I also speak fluent Spanish. I guess given those two regions of the world, which one do you think is going to prosper? I guess more economically, if in 2 years, I had to choose one of the two.
Latin America or where?
Or Europe, because I have a German citizenship through my mom, so I have a German passport, so I'd be able to live and work in Europe. But then again, my dad is from Colombia, so I do speak fluent Spanish. So given, those two regions of the world and the advantages that I have in both, which one do you think would, I guess, prosper more economically? And which one, I guess if you're in my position and you have
yeah,
those
you know,
two...
I don't know. I mean, you know, there's a lot of, you know, reasons to try to go to Latin America. Germany, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think there's, you know, there's probably better opportunities in Germany than there are here. But I think Asia, Latin America, some of these emerging market economies, I think Asia is the strongest. But Latin America, I mean, you know, you don't speak, I mean, Brazil is Portuguese. But I mean, you could probably get, you could probably pick it up. I don't know. I mean, I would look into it. I mean, I would travel to both regions, kind of look at where you'd want to live. Hopefully, you know, I could get to the United States Senate and help turn things around so you want to stay here. You know,
sure.
really want to make it so I want America to be the most attractive, lucrative, emerging market. I mean, we have destroyed our economy, no question about it, but we can rebuild it. You know, we can make it better, faster, stronger, revealing my age as a $6 billion man, but we could do it. We could do this, but we can't do it with the government standing in our way. It is impossible. Until we change the policies coming out of Washington, there is no hope for success, right? You know, the economy can't recover. But the formula is simple. We you know, it's not rocket science. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. We know what works, and we know what doesn't work. And right now, we're still doing what doesn't work.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Actually, on my studies, I'm actually studying China's political economic development here. I'm gonna study abroad there in spring semester. The thing is, I remember you saying something about, I guess, they need to take into account sort of cultural factors. I guess when you want to move abroad. So I was thinking probably not moving to China just because I guess the advantages I would have there would be somewhat limited considering that.
Yeah. Well, having contacts, having friends, knowing the language, all these things are important. Anyway, let me go. We got a lot of calls, and I've only got 22 minutes left.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks,
Peter.
Eric.
Take care.
Next call is David from Kansas. Go ahead, David.
Hi, Peter.
Hey, how are you?
The lady called earlier about she was asking about gold coins. She might want to consider buying a Austrian Philharmonic because she can buy that near spot price. And the chances are it's going to have numismatic value in the next 10 years because the euro is going to go the way of the U.S. dollar, and it's probably going to be a thing. I was watching CNBC the other day, and there's a panel discussion, and I don't remember the guy's name. You would probably recognize him if you saw him because I know you've appeared on CNBC quite a lot. There was a suggestion that maybe the Russians, in conjunction with the Germans and possibly a couple other countries, were conspiring to put together a alternative currency that would be backed by gold. And there's a story that Putin apparently had his cabinet together and gave each of them inscribed gold coins that had the inscription in Russian, and I can't translate. I'm sorry, I do have Russian in my background, but I was never taught the language. But it was essentially... the new world currency was the inscription on the coin. Have you heard anything about this? And what would this
no,
do?
I mean, I don't know. You know, there obviously we're going to have to move away from the dollar being a reserve currency because, you know, I've abused that. You know, the reason that we're running these huge deficits is because the dollar is a reserve currency. If it wasn't, we couldn't do it. But we're pushing our problem on the rest of the world. We're undermining their economy. We've taken advantage of the gift that they gave us. And so the world has got to prepare to leave the dollar and embrace something else. I hope they embrace gold because that's what makes the most sense. I don't want another fiat currency to be reserves. Currency has to be backed by something real. You have to have intrinsic value to money. And gold is the best. And so I'm sure we're going to move in that direction. That's one of the reasons that I own a lot of gold myself, because when we do move back to a sane, and in America, a constitutional monetary standard, it will be based on gold, and gold prices will be much higher when that happens. So,
I've pointed out the historic monetary relationship of gold and gold to interest rates and things like that to certain people. And people, they are reluctant to make an investment in gold because people look at the price of gold and think, well, I can't afford that. And I ask them, well, you put your money into 401k, right? Well, what are the investments? What are the equities that your 401k invest in? What's the dividend yield? Who are the companies? They don't know any of those questions, but they trust that these managed accounts are somehow acting in their best interest. But I found that if you take a silver American Eagle coin and you show it to someone, the first thing is that they have a look of awe on their face because they immediately know that it's real money. You know, the look of the
thing it's real. And you know, when interest rates are zero, when interest rates are zero like they are now, why not own gold? I mean, you get nothing if you leave your money in the bank. You know, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, you can get a 7% CD. Okay, gold pays nothing. Why not buy a 7%? But right now, you get nothing in the CD. And they're printing dollars like crazy, so you might as well own gold.
I was laughing with a guy at the bank the other day, a manager, and I pulled him over. I said, look at those mortgage rates. They're lower than they were 5 years ago. And I asked him, what's a CD paying? He's like, well, if you put $10,000 in, you can probably get 1 or 2%. And we were both chuckling. I said, do you understand what's going on right now and what's going to happen? What's the ultimate the end game to what the government's doing with the Federal Reserve and the low interest rates and their monetary manipulation? And he seemed to understand it. He was laughing about how he would never how he would never invest in a CD and how he would be surprised if anyone actually would. But this is the
difference. Well, they're actually certificates of depreciation. That's what they are.
I'm going to use that. All right, thanks, Peter. I know you got other people online. Thanks.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your call. Next up is Jeff in Connecticut, a potential constituent, hopefully a registered Republican voter who's prepared to vote for me in the primary. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hey, Peter, great job. First off, you have trouble accessing your radio show on your website. Not sure if you knew that. But my question is, are you shocked that the price of gold is still where it's at compared to where it should be based on all
I mean, I'm not shocked. I had expected it a couple of years ago to be higher today than it is. So it's just, it just shows you how little the world understands our problems. That gold is not a lot higher, that the number of people who actually understand what's going on is very few in relationship to the rest of the world. Now, at some point, light bulbs are going to start going off, and all I'm doing is telling people, look, you know, buy before it's a frenzy. That's what I think.
Well, 4 years ago, I didn't know what gold was, and that's when I began accumulating it, but it just amazes me that people are just, I guess maybe that's stupid, that they don't understand. But I certainly caught on. I don't know if I was brainwashed by you or what. Thanks, Peter. I appreciate that.
Well, I didn't brainwash you. I enlightened you. I'm Morpheus, right? I gave you that pill that allowed you to see reality. You know, you were brainwashed before you started listening to me.
And I've done. Well.
I got you out of the Matrix. Now you're in Nebuchadnezzar, whatever it is.
I've done well listening. Thank you.
All right. Well, are you calling? Are you making calls for my campaign?
I am.
He's already up. Thank you. Thank you. We need you. And I don't know, is anybody having problem listening to the radio show on the Europac site? I mean, it's a new site. If anyone can't listen to it live, I gotta let the web guys know that, because I know a lot of people go to Europac, although you can listen on shortwave. There are other places you can listen. Next up, David out of California. Go ahead, David.
Peter, thanks so much. Big fan. I'll be quick.
Thank you.
I have a question about, by the way, you enlightened me as well, so thank you. Keep it up, and best of luck with the Senate run. Can you walk me
thank
through?
You.
I've listened to your shows, you've read your books. I've just been totally turned on to you recently. Didn't have a big background in finance. I learned a ton. Walk me through again the Chinese market versus the U.S. They're keeping their dollar depressed, and they're selling us and the rest of the advanced world or wealthy world their low-cost goods. And they're investing the money that they make partly back into their infrastructure, but a lot of it into our treasuries or the euro. We are keeping our dollar fairly low, as you've talked about, and we're trying to export more. What else could they put their money in if they were, producing for their own people and their own people were consuming their own goods?
Well, I mean, basically what their government is doing is undermining the ability of their own citizens to consume by keeping the value of their money low, so that we end up taking advantage of that, because the goods that they're producing get shipped here to America and Americans consume them. And,
dollar went up.
That is hurting. That's hurting their economy. They're focusing on exports. Well, the key is you don't have to export it. The only reason that you export is to import something else. The whole idea behind an economy is to produce consumer goods for your citizens. And some countries export some of the goods they produce because they can import the goods that another nation produces. But to simply export your stuff and get nothing but little pieces of paper, you are wasting your resources. You are not getting the benefits of your hard work. The Chinese government needs to, you know, get out of the way, let the RMB go up, so that the Chinese citizens will buy what they make and get the benefit of it. And, of course, when they do that, they deprive Americans of the benefit. All of these products that are on the shelves of Walmart, they disappear because they're not there anymore. They're on shelves in China. You know, they can't be in China and America at the same time. You know, so what we're consuming is what someone in China is doing without. It's almost like they're rationing goods in China so that we can have them here. That, and when that changes, it's going to be a boom for China, and it's, you know, a disaster here. But you might say, well, gee, why am I hoping that they'll figure it out? Well, they're going to figure it out eventually. That's the point. You know, they're not going to be stupid forever. And my point is, the sooner they figure it out, the better. Because the longer it takes for them to figure it out, the more damage our economy gets, the more dependent we become on their charity, and the harder it's going to be for us to sustain ourselves when they take it away.
But if their dollar goes up, then their people have to pay. I'm not arguing with you. I'm just trying to understand it. Their dollar will go up. Their people will have to pay more for the goods. You know, and the trillions of dollars of stuff they're shipping around.
No. They don't have to pay more. No. You got it backwards. When their currency goes up, then their people pay less for goods. The prices come down. Yeah.
Right. Sorry. I'm sorry. Their prices will go down. But the trillions of dollars that they're selling of goods to the world, not just the U.S., Europe, other countries, would China alone have enough money to be able to buy all the goods that they're currently shipping outside the country?
Yes. Well, you know, there's 1 billion people in China. There's a lot more Chinese than there are us. There are plenty of people. But money doesn't mean anything. Money, just take money out of it. It's pieces of paper. It's purchase. Consumption comes from production. Think about this. Let's assume that you were on a desert island and you were stranded, right? And you didn't have any money. You lost your wallet. Are you with me?
Yep.
All right, you lost your wallet and you were hungry, and so you decided to, like guys in my book, you fashioned a net and you caught a fish, okay?
Right.
Now, you don't have any money to buy the fish, but you have the fish. Can't you eat that fish even though you left your wallet, you know, you lost it in the water?
Right.
You follow me? You don't need the money. You need the fish. If all you had was a wallet full of money and there were no fish on that, no matter how much money you had, there's nothing to eat because it doesn't exist. So in China, the money doesn't mean anything. Money is a way of divvying up what you produce. The minute the Chinese produce it, they can afford it. It's the Americans that can't afford stuff because we don't make it.
But don't they want to get away from red reports that they want to get away? I don't know how much we can trust of what they say anyway because they're, you know, censor everything. But assuming it's accurate, they want to get away from producing low-end goods and want to do what we do with Silicon Valley, biotech.
Well, everybody would like to do what we do. That's consume without producing. But, you know, everybody can't ride in the wagon, right? Somebody's got to pull it. Everybody cannot emulate the United States. The only reason we can run this phony economy is because we've conned other nations into supporting us. So, you know, believe me, production isn't the low end of the totem pole. It is the totem pole. I mean, if you want to be an industrial society, you need to have industry. You need to produce. You know that. And
I get you.
China's
so
doing the right thing.
We should produce our own stuff for our own people. It would be more cost effective, and we wouldn't have to rely on outside countries. I see how that benefits us.
Well, the problem is the problem is right now it wouldn't be cost effective. Because we can't produce as inexpensively as China because our taxes are too high. We have too many regulations. That's the problem. So we are not competitive. So if we are going to produce, we're going to have to remove all the impediments to production. And that's why I'm running for the United States Senate. I want to go to Washington and remove all those barriers, repeal all those rules and regulations, shrink government so that we can produce. Because when China cuts us off, if we don't do that, we're screwed. And, anyway, thanks for the call. We're running out of time.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
I've got just 9 minutes. Let me see if I can get the final two callers. Eric in California. Go ahead.
Hi, Peter. I'm the one who wrote your Peter Schiff iPhone app. I was wondering if you've seen it yet.
Oh, you know, I know there is an application on iPhone that apparently if you subscribe to it or buy it, you get what?
It's absolutely free. It's a free download. If you have an iPhone, you can go to iTunes, search for Peter Schiff, the app called I Follow Peter Schiff, and it falls right to your phone. And what it does is it aggregates all the YouTube videos you put out, all the Twitter tweets that you put out, and it subscribes to your RSS feeds on Schiff for Senate and your Facebook page. And basically it presents a really easy-to-navigate interface that gets all the update information that you post onto the Internet.
Does it grab stuff from my Europac site as well?
Not yet, but I was thinking about that. If that's something you'd like, I can do that. But I know you've been redesigning the site, so I've been kind of waiting for everything to stabilize.
Yeah, the new site is up there. Yeah, I put a lot of commentary on there, so there's a lot of good stuff on the Europac site as well.
I mean,
I don't have an iPhone, so I'm not part of that world. You know, I'm still using a BlackBerry, so... But for those of you who do have the iPhones and understand what these apps are, there's something that has to do with me. So
somebody testified that it was great to help with the campaign because they can just go up to, you know, some their families or friends or the random stranger, and, you know, if the topic comes up, they can just pull up on their iPhone the Peter Schiff YouTube video that's relevant to the conversation and show them right there right in their face.
All right, well, that's good. Hey, I really appreciate you doing that. If anybody wants to learn about it, I mean, you know what you do. You know, you're an iPhone user, so you know what you need to do to check out these apps. So, Eric, are you making any phone calls for me out there in California for Schiff for Senate?
I've been trying to, but I haven't been able to yet, partly because I've been trying to deal with your campaign. Just, one, to get, you know, the word out on this app, and then, two, I tried signing up for the phone bank originally, and your auto response things or whatever never came back to me, and I didn't get any authentication thing to log in. And
try it again. I did it last night live. You can see it on my YouTube channel, and it seemed to work for me. So, it's easy.
So this weekend I'm going to give it a try again. So,
all right. Thanks a lot, Eric.
I did have a quick question. It's kind of a follow-up on what David just asked about China. So a while back you said that the U.S. government, you know, publicly tells China, oh, you need to let the yuan rise. But secretly... The U.S. government doesn't want this, and you implied that the weak yuan somehow benefited our massive borrowing. I was wondering if you could explain that, or was that correct? Interpretation.
My thinking, and this is all a charade, or maybe it's reverse psychology. The last thing that our politicians want China to do is let the RMB go up. So we're so afraid they might let it go up that we're ordering them to let it go up because we think that's the best way to make sure that they don't do it. Because they don't want to look like, you know, we're beating them up or forcing them to do something. But clearly, none of these deficits, none of this stimulus would be possible without China's help. And China's help is buying all the treasuries and keeping their currency low. So, you know, they can't simultaneously let their currency appreciate yet keep buying all of our treasuries. The only reason they're buying all these treasuries is because they're buying them with the dollars that they're buying to keep their currency down. So, you know, either the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing, or there's some method to their madness, and I think it's probably the latter. Anyway, thanks a lot, Eric. Next up is Tom in North Carolina, the last caller of the night. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, Peter. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
May I had a question. I wanted to ask your opinion on something. My wife has been, following you for a little while, and she's definitely heard your message around the concern that the dollar is going to get devalued and we're going to have hyperinflation. And what she is concerned about, and what we're considering right now, is that her 401k currently, and we both work right now, but she's got a 401k that we're concerned that if there's hyperinflation, the value of all her retirement savings in that 401k are going to be lost.
It depends on what investment she has in the 401k. I mean, if she's got treasuries in there or, you know, muni bonds or dollar-denominated corporate bonds, and if there is hyperinflation, she will be wiped out. But if she has real assets, if she has, you know, a precious metals fund, a emerging market fund, a foreign bond fund, if she has things like that, then she won't. So, you know, if you think that there's going to be runaway inflation like I do, and then you need to construct a portfolio that will survive that environment. And, you know, and that's what I'm trying to help, you know, all my clients do at Euro Pacific Capital. That's what I believe is coming. And even if we don't get runaway inflation or hyperinflation, which I admit is the worst case scenario, I think we will still get very high inflation before we have the political courage in Washington to do what it takes to prevent hyperinflation. So I think the portfolio that I envision that you create, if you're afraid of hyperinflation, I think it'll do very well, even if it doesn't get that bad. But I think that, you know, you've got to act soon.
Okay. Well, one of the things, I guess, I mean, she can invest it in emerging markets and that sort of thing, but she doesn't have the ability to put it into precious metal. There's no investment.
Yeah, well, there might be an option. There might be a mining fund. You know, she might have a choice of various mutual funds. One of them could be a gold mining fund. You know, just look around. But there could be a natural resource fund, an energy fund. You know, you can look at things that look like they're commodity-based or hard assets, the things that will hold their value.
Okay, the other piece.
Anyway.
The other piece, she has a pension that is entirely in Treasury. So I guess the question we were going to ask is, she was considering quitting her job so we could cash that out and invest it somewhere better. And we want to get your opinion.
Well, I would look at what the options are first in the plan. But, yeah, I mean, if you have a pension and you have bad options, it might make sense to quit your job, roll it over, and then, you know, maybe get your job back or another job back so you can take control of that pension and make sure that it doesn't get wiped out if you believe, like I do, that we're going through runaway inflation or high inflation. But anyway, call up Euro Pacific Capital, 800-727-7922, or have her call up 800. Talk to a broker. Let's find out your exact circumstances, and we can explain the strategy, the risks, and you can decide if it's something that you want to do.
Okay, we'll do that. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Tom. And I guess this is a good time to remind everybody, you know, all investments carry risks. You know, if you invest abroad, you take a lot of risk. If you invest in America, I think you take a lot of risks. There's risks in stocks. There's risks in bonds. There's risks in everything, unfortunately. You know, the government has made it in America that, you know, if you want to be a conservative investor, there's really nothing that you can do. Because if you buy bonds, you know, the yield is so low that you're going to have to eat into your principal just to survive, which means you're going to lose your principal over time. So the government has kind of forced you into the realm of what they would consider risky. But you got to decide which risks you want to assume. For me, I want to invest abroad. I want dividend-paying stocks. I want precious metals. Everybody has to make their own decisions. You know, call up a Europac broker. Find out the facts about, you know, what we're recommending, what the risks are. Compare it to what you're doing. Make a decision. And also, you know, I've got my view of what I think the economy is going to do. My view is in the minority, fortunately for me, because, you know, the minority tends to be right. But nevertheless, I think the conventional wisdom among the major Wall Street firms and up in the government is that I don't know what I'm talking about, that everything is great in America, that we're the soundest economy in the world, that the stimulus is working, that, you know, everything that I believe is white, they believe is black, and vice versa. So recognize if you're going to follow my investment advice, you know, you're going out on the same limb as I am. But, you know, you got to call like you see it. You got to look at the facts and think for yourself. You know, I think the majority is totally wrong. Just like they couldn't see the housing bubble, they couldn't see the real estate bubble, they couldn't see the dot-com bubble. They don't understand that the whole thing is a bubble.